This is the Land and Legacy Podcast, brought to you by Whitetail Properties Real Estate. We're your hosts, Adam Keith.
And Matt Dye. This is your weekly resource for habitat management, wildlife management, and recreational real estate. We hope you guys enjoy the show.
Welcome back, Land and Legacy Podcast, guys. Hoo-wee. It's been a long couple of weeks. More on that later. Not long, as in terrible, but just a drinking out of fire hose couple of kind of weeks. And we're back on Land and Legacy Podcast, and we're your host, Adam Keith. Matt Dye's in there somewhere. There he is.
When was the last time you and I recorded a podcast together?
It's been a while. The last one I did was 2 weeks ago with Zach Miller, headed to Utah.
Yeah.
And then
before that, I was on vacation.
Yep.
And so, I don't know if I recorded with you during those. I don't know.
You weren't on vacation when we recorded or did anything.
I don't know. I don't remember. It's been a good while.
Yeah.
But good to be back. Good to be back. Home in the groove of things and really thinking about whitetails, because season is open in Missouri.
Yeah, no doubt. You've been a couple of times with Seth Harker. I have not been yet.
Yep.
It was kind of difficult to do the elk hunt and then get home and say, okay, see ya, I'm going hunting. Plus, it's been so dang hot around here.
Yeah. Just like most early Septembers, you're kind of racing around if you got good deer that you summered and you're trying to find the pattern before the acorns really drop. And that's kind of been the situation in the hunts I've had with Seth. And hunted two nights and saw three different mature deer between those two nights, and one 4-year-old, one, I guess, and then one 7.5 and maybe like a 6 or 7.5 year old. So they are moving during daylight, which is great. It's just honestly kind of the cat and mouse of hunting bigger fields. Are they going to come within range?
Yeah.
Last night they did not, and then I was in text communication with Seth this evening, and it was very, very last light when two deer were within range for him and his son, Trace.
Were they hunting anywhere near where you hunted?
Yeah. I mean, so basically, quick story, last night they were on one of the bucks was on the east side of the field within range of a blind. We hunted with the southeast wind yesterday. Wind switched to more southwesterly today. So naturally, the right move is to then move to the blind that the deer were feeding in front of yesterday with a nice southwest wind. Deer comes out on the east side underneath of where we were, makes a scrape, and then at dark finally filters farther east in front of the blind, but too late to film.
So if you had been in the stand that you were in last night or yesterday afternoon, you would have killed that deer, or if the wind hadn't been bad.
Correct, and yeah. Vice versa.
Yeah.
Yesterday, right? If we had been in the blind yesterday, we would have killed a group. And
the only complaint I really have about the farm that Seth's on is the fact that there's no, being a lease, a long-term lease, there is no ability to put in these bedding thickets like we talk about. So it's a little bit more sporadic bedding than it is on, say, one of our places.
Yeah, and it's just like he's hunting a large field, but the field is broken up in different forages.
Yeah.
And they really seem to be keen in on a saddle area that's really well protected. You can't really see a crazy long ways there from outside to in. But there's diverse, you know, fall annuals and then alfalfa. And these deer are bouncing back and forth between both. But from one side of the field to the other is about 150 yards. And these deer are, I mean – It is. Give me 10 more yards. Give me 20 more yards, and we're well within shooting range.
Yeah.
And they're just walking that fine line. So cat and mouse game. I think there's a southwest wind tomorrow forecast, and so we might find ourselves in the blind, and hopefully the fourth night, I thought third time might be a charm for him and his son, but perhaps fourth time in there we'll have enough deer movement to get them within range. But nonetheless, we're trying to beat the acorns, and there's mature deer moving within daylight, and can't really complain about that. So every sit there have been encounters, and very close encounters, you know, with some good deer.
Mm. Yeah, no doubt. It's one of those things when you're looking at a 7-pluser and a 5-pluser and a 4.5-pluser, and you're seeing them in daylight, and you're not bumping them out. It's like, oh man, just a matter of time before we make it happen. So
that's it. In good daylight too, not like the last couple minutes. Like you'll see them come out at 6:15, 6:30, and it's not getting dark here till 7:35, 7:40. And yeah. So there's an hour that you're like, okay, just get within range. Lots of footage.
Yeah.
And it just isn't quite happening yet. So hopefully soon.
And I think you told me too, one night you text me and that you were like, he's at 75 yards and we got 30 minutes of light left. And it's like, okay.
Yeah.
And then you're like, he bedded down in the field. Like, what? Who does that?
Yeah, like, and that's the 7.5-year-old, like, super mature deer, huge, huge gut. And, yeah, sure enough, he's just gorging. And most deer were making this switch between the fall annuals and alfalfa, but he pretty much just stayed in the fall annual blend and just gorged and gorged. And then, yeah. 20 minutes left of daylight, he just decided to bed down in the middle of the field. I'm like, well, at least he's feeling super comfortable that daylight. He's bedded down and he's a mature deer. Like, mm-hmm. He'll be back. So didn't get too upset. And I think time in those areas between those two stands at some point, it's gonna happen.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. I feel like there was something else I was going to say or was a story I was going to share. Oh, I was going to share the story of the other farm we hunt. One of the farms that we hunt that we don't like manage or it's just kind of one of those like, hey, it's a good change up. We started hunting it several years ago. It's where Chad shot a nice buck the last couple of years, and he shot that one in September last year. Going to a big alfalfa field, and we had one of the most consistent deer that I've seen, mature deer that I've seen in several years, where it was like the same camera every afternoon, 30 minutes before dark, hopping the fence, coming out into the food plot, or coming out in the alfalfa field. You're like, man, what more could you ask for? We were in Utah, and so every time I got service, which was very limited, I'd look at my emails, and I'd see that deer. And he would jump out in the field right before 30 minutes before dark, and then in the morning, he would either go in right before daylight or right after daylight. He would jump the same spot in the fence, and he would go up there. And, you know, we've talked about the changing variables on that farm and how everything is just like, okay, the cows are getting moved. He's cutting alfalfa. He's cutting the corn silage, all the things. And then the day, I can't remember if it was opening day or if it was September 14th, the day before opening day.
I think it was the day before.
Yeah, okay. So the day before opening day, I saw the camera. Those bucks went through right after daylight. And then a couple hours later, I saw the farmer rolling in with the hay equipment, and they cut the field for hay, the alfalfa. So the last cutting of the year, September 14th. And then to throw even more salt in the wound, then he threw a bunch of young heifers out on the field to eat around on the parts of the field that weren't alfalfa. It was like, oh, man. And those deer came out the first night, September, so the night before opening day. They came back out, and it was like their first, oh, they've cut this field. Now we haven't had a picture of them there since, and it's just cows. And, yeah, you're like, wow, okay, throw me another curveball.
There's wrenches and curveballs up there all the time. And
yeah.
I think that's where
– you got to act fast up there. It's like, you know, you can't act – it's like public land hunting. You can't you can't set it and hunt it conservatively because it will change so fast. So you got to get aggressive.
Absolutely. And I think that's why there are some deer with some age on them up there.
Yeah.
Because the variables are just, it's ever changing. And, I think honestly, it's kind of fun sometimes. It can be frustrating, don't get me wrong, to hunt places like that. But at the same time, I think those opportunities and those challenges are variables that change at the frequency that they do on a place like that. It really makes you become a better woodsman and key into those changes that are so ever present. Like I hear the term e-scout, and I think that's great, and everyone does that. But at the same time, you should not just be going and then when you get to wherever you're hunting, just going and glassing and trying to put eyes on something. Like, you should take it the next step further and be a really big student of the resources that are available or that are not available in that area. Like, maps are great. Aerial maps are wonderful to get you started, but that's not that the woodsman at some point in you has to come out and be applied to those situations. And that's one where on that farm specifically, you really kind of have to be wrapping your head around that constantly. Mm-hmm. Keep you on your toes.
No doubt. Yeah, it was. Ooh, yeah, so we'd be watching the cameras and trying to put a game plan together because there's still other fields that haven't been cut. But trying to figure out where they're coming in at, don't know. A lot bigger fields. The field they were going into was a lot smaller than the other ones. So it's like, yeehaw, okay, cool. If you followed our social media, you saw a picture back in or a little video clip from the mag view that we're using, the little adapter that goes on your – Chad slapped it on the Vortex spot and scope, put his phone on it. It's super cool product. And he put it on there, and of course his iPhone shot an amazing video of some bucks out in some alfalfa, and it's just like, man, that's super cool. But now that field has been cut, so back to the drawing board.
So
we got some a topic we want to cover tonight that's going to be a good one. They were kind of, you know, this is an interesting time for us every stinking year because we say, you know, a lot of our loyal listeners and that we just love are like, you know, habitat. But then this time of the year, we're like, man, there's not a lot of habitat work going on for us. We're hunting. And so it's like, well, we kind of want to cover hunting, but then again, we don't want to say, hey, guys, see you in January when we get back to it, because we certainly do habitat throughout the fall. But in this instance, we're going to talk habitat and hunting.
Yes. And I always like, I don't think that most people listening to this necessarily think about one without the other. So every time that we can really kill two birds with one stone and tie those two factors in are the podcasts that do really well and that people really enjoy, they gravitate to. And so I think that's fun for us to talk about. But with this topic as well, we're also going to talk about another very important factor when it comes to managing game populations and what we see as opportunity and how we judge opportunity from state to state. So what I mean by that is we're going to talk about hunting, we're going to talk about habitat or land use, we're going to talk about regulations. And I want to remind people as we're talking about this is from our perspective, this is from our time in the field, our time moving across the country, talking with landowners, being in constant communication with lots of folks in every region of the country, and well, I don't know however many states it's been now. So a very 31. Good sample size, 31, a very good sample size of, those factors. We have some, let's say, basis that we're going off of. Again, these are opinions, but at the same time, I think it's going to be a fun conversation to move people's ideas and thoughts around. You know, the topics of what states are the best, you know, what states have the most potential out there.
Yeah, especially from a buyer standpoint, when you think about, okay, I want to buy a farm. I don't care where it's at. Let me I want to basically mean that I want to buy a farm, doesn't matter the state, that I can get a tag every year and I can be set up to where I can get the dream farm a lot quicker than buying a farm in a state that's like, the land's cheaper, but it's going to be a lot harder and a lot longer to get there. This is a good podcast for those guys.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't, it's not necessarily going to factor in, right, that cost variable, because that's just, you can't cover that in 15 hours from a podcast, but it will give that perspective of what is that opportunity in these areas really look like. And I think a fair evaluation of, we're not just talking about like the Boone and Crockett scores here. We're talking about more than just what that, you know, showcases and has, because that's not necessarily what's happening now, right? That's a look at what has happened over time, but it doesn't give you necessarily that frequency of what's happened in the last like 5 years, because you and I both know land use changes pretty drastically, whether it's farming techniques, the commodity prices move things, and that changes what happens on the landscape. So this is, I would say, maybe a little bit fresher of a take than that, if you've used that in the past to kind of have these same ideas and considerations that we're going to talk about. But basically, we're going to cover some of the information we've gained of states.
No doubt.
Yeah. However many years now, 6 years or so.
Yep. Well, kick it off.
And what is your all-around best state for hunting whitetails, considering habitat, the hunting opportunity from a regulation standpoint, weighing those things out?
Yeah.
And windle it down, and we'll kind of go through our thought processes there. But kind of, what are your thoughts?
First off, I have to lay out my general, what I look for, what excites me. And so my idea may be different than other people, and I want to explain why. And so first off, my goals are 5.5 and older age class bucks. So we're trying to really harvest mature deer that have the potential to express, you know, a lot of their potential. So it can get pretty hard for a person to do that in some states that may allow rifle season hunting or hunting with a rifle during the rut when bucks are most susceptible to be harvested. So that's where, you know, you kind of have to, it takes a special property or a large tract to avoid some of these variables that I'll lay out. But for me, if I am like, okay, I'm targeting, you know, a couple of specific bucks, but I'm also wanting 5.5 and older, obviously because of our job, we understand that habitat is crucial. Quality habitat is crucial. Diverse habitat is plots outside of crop fields. In fact, we should be growing more in the other acres, not just food plots and crop fields. So trying to maximize that, and that requires some very diverse habitat, as well as already historical and a good seedbed of native vegetation. So states that stick out for that are Iowa and Kansas and Kentucky, because they're one buck states, you know, for a lot of us. Now, you can kill multiple in Iowa, but we're just saying, okay, for me in Missouri, what states do I look at and kind of be a bit envious? It's those, because, you know, Kentucky being over the counter is a little different than Kansas and Iowa, but Kentucky has that, they just have a pretty good history. And there are places, especially in western Kentucky, that are very nice landscapes and have a lot of diverse habitat and produce a lot of really nice bucks. So if you're ranking out those in 1, 2, and 3, golly, it would probably go Iowa 1, Kansas 2, Kentucky 3. Now, there's another state that I want to bring up that may be a 2, but due to regulations, it's not on this list, and we'll get into that later. But I got to go with Iowa being number 1 because of the history, because of the ability to manage the herd, and because of the pockets of really diverse habitat that can be created and the snake and the seed beds that is there with a little bit of work. Take Greg Lessinger's farm, for example. Didn't look the way it does today, but because the seed bed was there, we were able to do some work, and boom, it looks like it did 80 years ago, 100 years ago, 250 years ago.
And what's interesting about the state of Iowa is I think of it of like almost like a horseshoe. The outside bands of the state are really awesome. And from east to west, you go from, you know, the driftless regions in the northeast to the Lus Hills in the west. And so you kind of have a river on each side, and then that whole southern band is just a phenomenal mix of elevation, rolls, woodlands, savannas, prairies, and crops now. But the very center portion is kind of dull. Like, there's not a ton of quality habitat.
Yeah.
There's river bottoms. Basically, things are very secluded to tributaries just because of the immense amount of ag in the center portion of the state.
No, no.
But you go to any one of those regions outside of that, and you're doing phenomenal. Like, every direction you look, there's just big deer being killed consistently. I don't know if it's a percentage, Adam, or not, that's the right question to ask here on this, but like on a weight wise, from habitat quality to regulation, which one of those factors do you think in the state of Iowa is the thing that's really...
Oh, it's regulation.
Yeah.
I don't even have to think twice about that.
That's the biggest lever pull, right? The influencing factor here.
Yeah.
That's
the trump card for Iowa. Yeah.
Yeah.
We've talked about it on the podcast in the past. Iowa as a whole doesn't have really quality habitat. It doesn't have diverse habitat. A lot of the videos, and I just say videos, not to ever bash on the hunting industry and the videos, but just because that's easy to have access to for all of our listeners to go and watch some of these videos, some of these popular hunting shows that are occurring in Iowa, and you can look through. And if you've listened to this podcast much and you've watched our social media and some of our videos, you probably have started in the Whitetail Properties videos. You've started training your eye to understand that some things that we were thought were good or okay or didn't matter now really matter. And when you watch these videos, you can say, man, that deer just walked through what was called bedding, and most of it is smooth brome. That's not bedding. Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, wow. That whole area, that drone footage shows that whole 200 acres as being...
cedars.
Pretty much cedars. Well, that's not doing us very good. Or that whole 200 acres is mostly warm season grass, which they can't eat. It's decent cover, but I would rather have shrubs mixed in. So you just look and you just pick apart a whole video and you're like, man, that habitat was not good. But the reason they killed a giant was because it's a one buck state for a lot of guys. The rifle season is not during the rut. It's not over the counter, and it's shotgun. It's still not rifle. Yeah, you're good point. It's not rifle unless it's a straight wall cartridge. It's muzzleloader or shotgun. So there's all these requirements where you look at it and be like, man, from a Missouri boy looking at Iowa, you say, it ain't even the same. Even though we're neighbors, it's like I'm growing up dirt poor, and I'm walking over to my neighbor next door just crossing the fence, and they're eating like kings over there. Like, that's the stark difference. Because in Missouri, it's not anywhere like Iowa.
Right, from that regulatory standpoint. I want to make a clarifying point. When you were saying the habitat generally is not good, that's a statement of large, like, majority of things are unmanaged currently.
Yeah. But what most makes of the Iowa most good, of the deer farmers are buying old cattle farms.
Yeah. But most of the areas, though, however, are responsive positively to solid management. Like, it's not a situation that a lot of times go into and like, wow, this is going to be an absolute chore. When we take this away, then we got to fight that. Then when we fight that and it's gone, we're going to have these invasives come back. Once you kind of get a handle on things, the landscape and the seed bank is really pretty responsive in the state of Iowa from what we've done and worked. So it's like, although it's not great right now, it has the potential to be. And that's factoring into your decision, though, too. Like, hey, this is really one of the best all-around states that is really out there. From that combination of the potential of the habitat, current use of the habitat, or land use, excuse me, and then those regulatory processes, just because it's so heavily – I mean, they have almost like these safeguards, right, in place that are a way to ensure that there is a heavier percentage of the population, the deer herd, that is adult deer, mature deer, 4.5+. Like, it is just built into the way that they do their tags and allotments.
It's in the culture.
Yeah. It's 100% the hunting culture. And everyone knows that, right? I mean, I don't think people are terribly surprised.
No.
Coming out and saying, right, Iowa. There is a great example of so many huge, huge deer.
Yeah.
It can get better. But a lot of that, like you said, Adam, is very much regulation-based.
Yeah, like, Iowa's Iowa because of regulations. Kentucky's Kentucky because of regulations. Kansas is Kansas because of regulations. Missouri is Missouri because of regulations. And I say that very much not the same as Iowa. Like, we're saying Iowa's Iowa because of regulations. Iowa is good because of regulations. Missouri is bad because of regulations. And when I say bad, bad based on my definition, there's not a lot of 5.5-year-old big, vast counties where you're like, oh, there's some studs throughout that county. It's more like farm to farm in Missouri versus county to county in Iowa, if that makes sense. Like, Iowa, you can take a county and say, doesn't really matter where you're in the county. Like, chances are an absolute giant's going to wander through at some point during the rut. You go into Missouri and you're like, I hope you're in a good farm, or I hope you're next to a good farm, because the regulations are creating that.
I think you need to hunt for neighborhoods in the state of Missouri instead of falling within these much vaster areas across the entire state, because it's so much better regulated. And too, I think that the culture and tradition of those states also play and weigh into it.
Yeah.
You know, I would say that Missouri generally is very heavy into the tradition of you know, the gun season and the opportunity that it brings and affords, and all about, you know, hunters being able to get out and
I have buddies that never even hunted growing up in high school, and now they hunt Missouri gun season. And you're like, I didn't think you hunted. Well, they do during Missouri gun season, because everyone hunts during Missouri gun season. Because everyone just goes, buys a tag, whatever, I got a 30-30, open sights, roll out there, 243, doesn't matter, and let's go hunting. In Iowa, I think as a whole, we all could probably agree that a lot of the residents, there's way less residents that probably hunt in Iowa than Missouri.
Well, there's less residents, too.
less residents, too, And so you look at that and you say, okay, all those combined, Iowa is whooping Missouri for that reason, and among many others. But it's, you know, I can think of a handful of clients of ours that have bought farms in Missouri or in Iowa from the states they've been in. And I can think of one guy in general. He had like, or he's got several hundred acres in Kansas or a couple hundred acres in Kansas, and he bought less than 100 acres in Iowa, and he said it has bigger deer and more of them in Iowa than his entire Kansas farm. Mm-hmm. That says a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But you only get a tag every 3 years.
And I, you know, just talking with another client of ours who was discussing, you know, the purchasing of you know, a tract of land in the state of Iowa. We were talking about regions and so on and so forth. And I said the same thing to him. Was, you don't have to have as big of a tract in Iowa to encounter and to hold or to know that at some point during the season – you're gonna have a chance at a good one, but you don't have to buy as much. Your buy-in is less. Price per acre may be higher than other places, sure, but you have then that return of investment opportunity on many pieces that to factor in. But right, an 80 acre tract in Iowa because of regulation is not 160 in Kansas, right? There's it might be half the size, but it could have twice as much opportunity potentially. So just very different.
No doubt. What about you?
I mean, I'm right there. I'm right there lockstep with you on just all around best. And I'm going to throw this one out as a knock on Iowa. At the same time as the regulation is really good, it would be very difficult from a personal side of things to own a farm there and not be a resident and have such the limited opportunity though, too.
No doubt.
You know, it's kind of a catch 22, you know? And so regardless, I really think that a lot of other states could maybe get closer to a more heavily regulation when it comes to bag limits and honestly, you know, I don't even think bag limits is a huge issue across a lot of states. I really think about when, like the season dates and like when does firearms play a role in those. So I'm going to answer your question and say I think Iowa's best, but I mean, let's just briefly talk about like season structures that are kind of a little bit of a red flag and maybe other states. Like a Kentucky, like an Ohio, like a Kansas, like a Nebraska, like an Indiana, right? Some of these states are really good, or in Illinois, but they all have these their own kind of personal twist on things, and it could be an over-the-counter situation, it could be a draw, but man, they all influence what we see as opportunity in those states. And I'm like, okay, for Kansas, for example, I think it's kind of interesting, and not saying I disagree with it, but I do think it's very interesting that pretty much open up with a muzzleloader season during velvet during late summer. And you have this incredible extended opportunity. And a lot of really big deer get killed during that time frame.
No doubt.
And it's just kind of like, huh, I wonder why they did that. Like, okay, that's just super, super interesting. You know, you mentioned the Kentucky and Indiana is really pretty similar too of the timing of that rifle season. Missouri falls into that category. It's right smack dab in the rut or right around the let's say peak rut, post rut time frame. And they're just so vulnerable. Even if you can kill one buck during that time frame.
Yeah. Your opportunity is so huge. You've got the rut hunt, rifle season hunt, and then you roll around and you've got that late muzzleloader right during, you know, in Missouri when we typically get one of the best cold fronts of the year when deer will really be on standing grain. So if you have food, game over.
Yeah. I mean, I like the fact that Missouri has such varied opportunity from bow season to gun season and the muzzleloader, but it puts a ton of favor in the outdoorsman's hands, right? Like,
no doubt,
you have such opportunity, and I'm very much for, hey, let's try and improve our age structure from a state standpoint. There's a lot of individuals, right, who can do that from property to property. That's fantastic if they have a large enough land mass just to make sure young bucks do get through. And that is huge that they can, if you will, in a small subset of sample size, can kind of trump those regulations just because they have a huge footprint. Fantastic. Yep. But you're seeing from them great age structures and awesome deer. And you just know that, hey, imagine if that's statewide.
No doubt.
And so I'm going to agree on the Iowa. I think the next question that comes up is, what is the state that has the most potential? And I think that this is going to come, and let's talk, let's say, maybe a little more heavily on the habitat side of things. Yeah. Because like we have talked about with the best state, a lot of that is very much regulation heavy.
Yeah.
But let's paint a picture of, okay, the most potential that we see in a state that's not one of those ones we're really mentioning up front, but if we could tweak some minor regulatory changes and it blew up from a habitat standpoint, man, that's right there at the top. What is that for you?
Ooh, that's very hard. But a state that comes to mind from a regulation standpoint, I've got to go with, I'm going to give you three states. I'm going to go with, of course, Missouri, because tweak the regs in Missouri, make it a one buck state, or just bump the rifle season back, and it could be right up there with Iowa. I mean, the exact same thing in northern Missouri as southern Iowa. In fact, almost probably better from just a habitat standpoint. Way more Missouri. I'm sorry if this is going to get under some skin because we have a lot of government agents and biologists that listen to this podcast. So I'm going to say Missouri has done appears to be a much better job on educating the public on quality habitat than the Iowa DNR.
Yeah.
And so Missouri has far more pollinator plantings, tree plantings, TSI, prescribed fire, all the things that we preach to help improve habitat. I think Missouri does a better job at that than Iowa. And Missouri could be Iowa, if not better, if it wasn't for the regulations. Another state that comes to mind is Nebraska, for almost the exact same reason. Regulations that aren't in favor of older age class bucks, but a more open landscape than Missouri, so therefore it doesn't get mentioned like Missouri does, because Missouri at least has more cover, and so and more like timber lots and places for deer to get old. Nebraska doesn't have that because a lot of it is prairie, and therefore, and when you think Nebraska, you know, you can picture it's a humongous state that goes way over chasing muleys and pronghorn to the eastern part of the state where it's whitetails and waterfowl. So Nebraska, Missouri, and then I got to go with Oklahoma because I absolutely love Oklahoma. If it wasn't so dang hot, I'd think about living there. And I didn't own a farm in Missouri, but, from a habitat standpoint, Oklahoma might be my all-time favorite right now. Just that the fact that the habitat is in so good a shape in a lot of places, like where you're like, there's a few things to tweak, but this is phenomenal right here.
Tweak it and add fire, not major transformations, but tweak it.
Maybe throw in a few fours because somebody before here sprayed too much 2,4-D. But throw in some Forbes and oh my goodness, control the hogs, and this thing could be awesome. But it's a two buck state, rifle season, long rifle season, can hammer them. And you can corn. So if your neighbor's like, whatever, I'll just go put out feeders, I think that has a pretty negative effect on it too.
Yeah. Did you mention being over the counter?
And over the counter, yep. Yeah.
Yeah. I think you hit the nail on the head, though, from that habitat standpoint, that it is rocking And it's such a diverse state too when you move from southeast across to the northwest portion, which is certainly cool. You just get a huge transition from piney mountains all the way to basically just little blue stem. Yeah,
I mean I was there a month ago, and you can say desert.
Yeah, and so you get this huge mix, but within that, there's constantly this transition, right, of plant communities, and you're going from one side of the spectrum all the way to the other. So you have diversity within the state. And then there still are, too, a lot of tributaries. So then you have the bottom land component across the state. So it's very fascinating from that way. I am particularly a big fan of, like, the Cross Timbers region. If you're not familiar with that, look it up. What that covers from portions of Texas up through Oklahoma and southern Kansas. But the Cross Timbers region produces some fantastic deer. That great mix of post oak, woodlands and savannas to grasslands and kind of everything in between. So that thing's super cool. I definitely try and focus in on that.
Habitat, another farm that, or another state that comes to mind from just a habitat strictly, because I'm not as up to date on all the regulations, is Minnesota.
Yes.
And I think I've said this maybe a time or two before, but I feel like it's easier to manage for giant deer and good quality deer in a northern climate than a southern climate. Like, I just stopped because I'm outside. People can't hear the cicadas and the crickets behind me, but I just got a whiff of skunk, so now I'm on high alert. Red alert around here. So time to stand up. And here's a funny backstory on my backyard is I haven't mowed it since the last week of May. That's how dry it's been.
Oh, Lord.
And so I have
patches. How many bales to the acre are you going to have?
It's really not that bad. Shocking.
Really?
That post oak that I have in the backyard, the giant one, like, it's ankle high from my concrete slab to the post oak. It's ankle high. It has not grown. That oak has just been sucking the moisture out of it. I've got some patches of tall crabgrass where the sunlight is, and it's still only shin high. Like, it's not that bad. Front yard, I mowed it more. I mowed it 3-4 times. But this in the backyard is hasn't seen a mower since the end of May. So that's my kind of landscaping. Kyle Ibarger would be proud of me.
There you go. Yeah.
There's a lot of weeds, man. So,
yeah.
Anyway, but Minnesota also, you know, there's parts of central Minnesota where you're like, man, the habitat, this is really close to historical right here. Like, this hasn't been used and abused and turned to whatever.
The shrub communities in Minnesota shock me.
Yeah.
I love them.
Here's a story for you.
Wetland and upland.
Speaking of habitat, you know, driving back from Utah, we hit around, you know, Zach has not spent a great amount of time out west, and so he hasn't seen a ton of pronghorn. So, I mean, we're eyes on the glass looking for pronghorn and muleys and all the other animals, and driving along and through southern on I-80, I think it is, or I-81, southern Wyoming. Muleys and mainly pronghorn everywhere. You get a little closer to Cheyenne, and all of a sudden you start seeing less and less pronghorns. Well, how much sagebrush you see? Nope, not much. A lot of it's been converted to one of the most popular smooth broom. It's like you can just see it when you're looking for pronghorn, the difference in the animals. And you say, okay, that's big. That's big species. If you look at a food web, you can go way, way up on the food web and say, yep, pronghorn, draw an axe through them. They don't like smooth brome. But if you start picking apart and you go all the way down that list, you could probably realize, oh, all the way down to the insects are not in favor of that transition. Wonder why, you know, when you span that out across the landscape in many of these states we're talking about, no wonder the animals are vanishing and there's not as many of them. Iowa being one of those where all these old pastures or all these old cattle farms got converted to orchard grass, fescue, and smooth broom, and now deer hunters are buying them. And because of neglect and not grazing and doing all that, natives are starting to fight back. But, like, we put it on fast forward working with Greg and just sprayed them out and removed them, and all of a sudden there's stuff everywhere now, really good species. And that's a big part of what we were talking about when we were weighing out states that are better than others, is because is that seed bed still there, or has it been sprayed out for years and years and years because this used to be corn and soybean rotation?
For sure. No, that's a huge consideration.
I'm or down south and it's pine plantation.
Yeah. No doubt. I mean, I find it tough to bring up the south, honestly, in this conversation, regardless of season structure. I think the hunting culture is pretty strong down there. But the land use and some regulation just make it very, very tough for folks to consistently be hunting older age class deer and as they're hunting maybe an older age class deer, feel pretty confident that they're hitting and allowing that deer based on the environmental factors that are coming into this equation, that it's at the top end of its potential.
I
don't feel that it's that many are. But I'm gonna throw a little bit of not a loop, but just a new state into the equation that we haven't talked about. And I'll preface it with it needs a lot of work from an invasive species standpoint. However, the state of Tennessee, I think, has some great potential for a couple reasons. Mm-hmm. I think it's got a nice balance of ag to a nice balance of cattle to a nice balance of, hey, they're like, you grow timber there, right? Like the trees are growing at a pretty quick rate, and you can have consistent harvesting throughout the state. So logging can be a pretty dominant feature, or you can see it moving as you move throughout the state. It's a unique mix there. So you have those three components that are trying to diversify things. But then also one thing we haven't really talked a ton about in the conversation thus far is the factor of hills, like topography. When you throw some bigger hills into this equation, deer get older. Like it's just harder to hunt them, right? People may not be as efficient or don't know how to hunt the hills. And so it's just harder. That kind of can play in against that regulatory process, although you might have the similar regulations as you do in Missouri as Tennessee. They got some hills there and some older deer are getting through. But I think with some strict habitat, more disturbances in the state of Tennessee, maybe some tweaking on the regulation side of things. Some areas are battling CWD, but at the end of the day, that area, that region, that middle latitude, moving east to west, I think that's a really nice area that you could be very productive in if given some change. So I see a lot of potential there in that state.
We almost need to do a breakdown of each state, because when you say Tennessee and you start describing, I'm like, that almost is Ohio, Indiana, Virginia, North Carolina.
1,000%.
A state that I really have grown to love and really enjoy my time there, and I love the landscape, and the plant communities are there in places, but the regulations are lock and key, hard to maneuver, is New York.
Yeah.
I think New York, if regulations were loosened up and things were allowed, like prescribed fire, and people really got proactive in timber thinning and timber management and invasive species control, New York would be talked about like Kentucky and Kansas get talked about. But the problem is the timber management is poor. The prescribed fire is non-existent because of regulation. And hunting regulations and ability to manage herd densities and also over the counter and everything like that, the culture is more, we can't grow big deer in New York, or when, so people just are happy to shoot anything with antlers.
Very much a very much a camp mentality.
Well, that goes with Pennsylvania and Michigan as well. Yeah. But at the same time, I think if people were aware that Michigan or that New York had the ability to grow giants, more people would be, okay, I'm going to hold off and I'm going to wait.
Yeah.
And New York could be a killer state and would rank very high and would be just an absolute beautiful, beautiful, beautiful place to hunt. But
yeah,
we all think of New York City, and we can't. You couldn't drag us there.
No, but everything.
I need a trip to New York City, like I need a hole in the head, kind of deal.
that state is gorgeous, and those who haven't spent time in it certainly encourage you to. But yeah, I mean, it has definitely resembled for me areas of Wisconsin and Minnesota. Obviously, similar latitudes. But wow, it has a pretty rich plant community in it for sure.
Yeah.
Also very shrubby, a lot of wetlands, a lot of swampland, but has hills, has crops. So that would be a huge transformation, I think, for the state. But it can be done. I think of Virginia is the same way. Obviously, a little partial there just growing up, but from the land use side of things of the farming community, the pasture, and really an aggressive timbering, economy. Like, there's a ton of logging that happens across the state.
Yeah.
You drive down the interstate, and you're like, okay, that was cut last year, that was cut 2 years ago, that was cut six, that's 15. But we just went 5 miles. Like, there's a lot of turnover. So huge opportunity for regulation changes. There's portions of the state. We've got 6-week gun seasons. And it's tough to get antlerless doe tags and with a gun. So short bow season, real quick, four-week archery, 2-week muzzleloader at the first 2 weeks of November. Then you roll into a 6-week gun season all the way through early January.
Yeah.
It's tough. Like, that is tough. And the resources are there to grow some really big deer, but regulations, like, it's, I think of, like, if you're riding a horse and you want to go from max speed to full to dead stop and you just pull the reins back, that's what the regulations are doing in that state. It's like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
It's very restrictive, very restrictive. So that mm-hmm. one's got a lot of potential, but there also is a lot of challenges with suburban sprawl and such that it didn't quite make, let's say, my list for the most potential in improvement as well, because a lot of things need to happen there. But anyhow, I think it's always fun to talk about this. I know you and I, as soon as we visit someplace new or whatnot, it's, hey, well, what was that like? You know, how'd you like that? Or what specifics were that farm were cool? And we've been fortunate enough to be a lot of places. So when we find something that's different, like, dude, you know, listen to this, check out some of these pictures. We're constantly sending pictures back and forth, and Kyle and Frank, and it's a lot of fun to do it. But man, it's also fun to kind of play the what if game. What if this was different? What if they change? You know.
And I think, to me, that's where it's like, you could just ask us from a real estate standpoint. People ask us, well, what about this state? Well, that state. What are your goals first? Okay, well, that state could be really awesome if they did this, or if you did this, and if they, meaning if the people in charge of the regulations changed it, it could be killer. Or the regulations are good, but you need to do this. For us, Iowa's great because it's mostly up to us. But in New York, it's okay because it's mostly up to them. And and that's South Carolina. Well, South Carolina, depending on the region you're at, you can go over a lot of crops. You've got a long growing season. But it's rifle season pretty much all fall. So good luck getting a 5.5-year-old. I hope you're dead set on a 3.5-year-old 120-inch buck. You shoot him in September 1st with a rifle and call it good. It's each state, which I'm all in favor of states choosing. Heck, I'm all in favor of farms choosing their own regulations or counties choosing their own regulations because there's so much variance there. But at least start with the states. But the problem is some states have handed it over to legislation while others have handed it over to biologists and panels or administrators or people in charge that are just that have a biology background. And those tend to be more better ran than the legislation ones. You never know what you're going to get with the legislation.
Yeah, or board of directors and such.
Yeah.
So there's a thousand variables. Unfortunately, I guess we'd say we're not in charge to help everyone out and balance some of this stuff out because you go from state to state and this varies.
Yeah.
But I don't envy the positions, let's say, that they have, because to manage wildlife on a state level, you go from southern Missouri to north Missouri to east to west.
Yeah.
You go through so many different land types and, land uses. Man, you have to just cast a wide net to capture all that. Mm-hmm. And the variances there. So it's not an easy job, but there are some things that, yeah, absolutely could change. Hunting cultures and so on and so forth will change and evolve. And I know that we're all outdoorsmen. And I don't think, let's say a state moving or adjusting a gun season by a couple weeks or changing it from a 15 day to a 12 day or from a, whatever the case may be, minor changes that it's really honestly going to keep anybody out of the woods. It's not going to stop me.
Mm-hmm. No doubt.
I'm not married to the fact that, that gun season's 9 days or 11 days, whatever it is in Missouri. Like if they want to change it a couple, okay. Or they want to change it back 2 weeks, whatever. It's going to be okay. This isn't going to affect anyone's life or death, situation here.
No doubt.
So,
but if we're making wishes, I wish they would make it in December.
Yeah.
After the rut and make it 10 days, middle of December, preferably the first 10 days. This was the first 10 days of December, because usually the first 10 days are relatively warm. Deer are kind of transitioning out of the rut back to their feeding patterns. They're kind of hard to hunt in that first 10 days. That's when we should have rifle season in Missouri.
Yep.
And make it a one-buck state. And unlimited archery does. And make it where you can get 10 doe tags with a rifle.
There you go. Yeah,
I mean,
you said hey if we're
very
wishing,
liberal antlerless tags.
Yeah, no, that is important. It really is important.
They need to hand out antlerless tags like we got hate in our guts.
Oh, I thought you could say like COVID tests.
No, let's not go crazy. Man.
Well, I think it's good though to have these conversations, Adam, and let people.
I think
kind
it's
of
just
think about
fun,
something.
Man.
It's fun, and it's fun to verbalize, let's say, some of those thoughts that we always have, and hopefully people can understand some of the balance back and forth of what we put emphasis on or not, and because there's a lot of times people may think that's super super important. It's like in the grand scheme of things. That really doesn't really have a huge – it's a factor, but it's not a weighty factor into this equation here. So I think it's just sometimes good to balance all those ideas out and turn those thoughts in the head into a podcast. So
no doubt.
Here we are.
Yep.
Best states and some that needs to have the most potential for improvement or to be a top state. So, man.
All right, guys. Hopefully you enjoyed it. Hopefully we got the wheels turning for you next – by the way, if you're considering buying a property, shoot us an email at info@atlantalegacy.tv, and we'd be glad to help you tie you in with the right agents, but also assist from wherever you're looking. We can assist you because we are licensed real estate agents, and so we can help you give advice on finding the right farm. Until then, we'll catch you next week.
See you guys.